Ich habe heute gesprochen mit Nick Bloom. Er ist Professor der Stanford University und er ist wahrscheinlich weltweit der Experte zum Thema Remote Work. Er arbeitet an diesem Thema schon seit über 20 Jahren. Und warum die Produktivität im Homeoffice nicht abnimmt, wie die Offices in Zukunft aussehen werden und warum immer noch genug für uns alle zu tun sein wird, das verrät er uns in der aktuellen Folge. Ich wünsche euch ganz viel Spaß. For a Better Working Life, der NWX-Podcast. Wir interviewen Menschen, die die Arbeitswelt neu denken und diejenigen, die sie jeden Tag gestalten. Wir liefern Zahlen, Studien und Insights zu dem, was wir Arbeit nennen. Heute The Interview. I'm talking today to Nick Bloom from Stanford University. He's the expert when it comes to the topic of remote work, a topic that many companies are struggling with because they're asking themselves how to deal with the demands of their staff. And he's here today to share his insights with us. Nick, I'm delighted to have you on our show. Thanks for taking the time.
Thanks very much for having me on.
Nicholas, for those who are not so familiar with your work, can you tell us a little bit about your background for those who don't know you yet? When did you start to engage with the topic of remote work?
I got involved in this, amazingly enough, more than 20 years ago. I started collecting data in 2003, and it was kind of a quiet topic, although I did get to meet Obama. I met Obama and Biden in 2014. Gave a TEDx talk, did some media, but I have to say it was kind of quiet. And then obviously in 2020, interest exploded.
Of course.
And since that time, I have spoken to literally thousands of managers, firms, done a lot of research, which hopefully I'll get to talk through today.
Nick, why were you interested at the first place in this topic, which was then pretty exotic, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it was really personal reasons. One is I'm one of four kids. Both my parents worked. I grew up in London. I'm living in America now, but you can probably hear from my accent, I'm British. And I remember when, one of us was sick or there's some problem, one of my mum and dad would have to work from home. And then when I started work, I saw some of the things with my wife when we were working in London. And so, there was very little data. I used to work at McKinsey long ago. I mean, this is more than 20 years ago.
Right.
And I remember that for management, there's a basic sense of, what's best practices, but for things around work-life balance, like working from home, but also paternity leave, companies are so different. So it's like, why is this, is there a best practice? What does the data say?
To kick off the topic, very generally spoken, what are the main downsides and the main advantages of remote work that you see and that you've experienced?
I think there's three flavors of it. So one is fully in person. So just to be clear, most people in Europe and the US, globally have to go in every day. That's actually, for Europe, that's about 60%. America, so that's about 60% of employees. So we're only really looking at the other 40%. And these are typically, university graduates. Of that, 30 of that 40% is hybrid. So I'm going to really focus on hybrid today because that's...
Right.
Folks that are, typically coming in the office 3 days a week, working from home too. And then there's about 10% that are fully remote. In both cases, the reasons that companies do this is it's just very profitable. It cuts costs. It doesn't seem to affect revenue. Happy to discuss, but, there's lots of social reasons and employee reasons, but ultimately it comes down to boosting the bottom line.
There seems to be a huge demand for having the opportunity to work at least hybrid or if not fully remote. Do you see any differences in, let's say, age, job roles probably, and countries that you can share with us? So are probably the younger demanding this more or less than the older folks?
So great question. It's less obvious than it seems. So having collected data now from 40 countries, what you see is a pretty strong pattern. Just folks in their 20s actually want to come in the office on average about 4 days a week. So think of my two oldest kids at early 20s, my undergrads at Stanford. The usual story you'll hear is, look, I want to come in Monday to Thursday because I'm starting my career. I want to get mentored. It's more social in the office. And, where am I going to go when I work from home? I'm sharing a flat or an apartment and four other people. And so, if I think of my son right now who is in an internship, he's in every day and that's what he wants. what you see is as folks get to their 30s and 40s, that's when you mostly see people want to work from home, typically 2-3 days a week because they have young kids. So there you get, you know, it's more your middle senior managers. And then when you get to kind of 55, 60 plus, that's back to empty nesters territory. So it tends to be back in the office. So this kind of U-shape, interestingly, is this missing middle of people that want to work from home, typically middle senior managers.
Hmm. When we're talking about working from home and remotely, basically, it seems very convenient if you have to fulfill specific tasks, prepare a presentation and work in a very concentrated way. At the same time, if you want to do some kind of, let's say, brainstorming with a couple of people in order to generate new ideas, it's probably not the best way to do that remotely. So can you give us some feeling of when does it make sense and when doesn't it make sense? And also, what does that mean for the timing? Because for the time spent at home, working from home, because the question for me would be, if you spend 3-4 days at home, you probably don't have 3 or 4 days for concentrating work, producing certain stuff, as I just mentioned. How would you sort of measure the whole thing?
Sure. So generally, you are right. There are certain things that are best in the office. So the three that come up a lot are mentoring, are innovation, and building culture. And look, you can do all of these remotely, but it's a lot harder. And so generally, that's why hybrid, something like 3 days in the office, 2 days at home, has become a kind of vanilla, like, the norm. In fact, 70% of Fortune 500 companies operate like that. So to give you a sense of how this works, I'll tell you about an A-B test I ran and published in Nature last year. So this was with a big company called Trip.com. They are a NASDAQ-listed multinational. They have about 40,000 employees. They are very similar to Expedia. Probably many listeners have used them. So what did they do? They took two divisions with 1,600 people, and these were in finance, marketing, and tech. And they randomized them by even or odd birthdays. If you have an even birthday, so you're born on the 2nd, 4th, 6th, 8th of the month, you have to come in all 5 days, as is kind of normal pre-pandemic. And if you were born on an odd day like me on May the 5th, you got to work from home on Wednesday and Friday. And they collected data for up to 2 years. What did they find? So two things. One is it actually had no impact on performance or productivity. So we looked at, you know, promotions, performance reviews, lines of code written, innovation scores, leadership scores. They were basically flat. And when you interview people, they said, look, it's really valuable coming in the office for sure. You really want to come in. But by the time you've come in 3 days a week, it's not obvious days 4 and 5 are additionally helpful. And they'd say, look, think of those extra 2 days. It's quieter at home. You can concentrate. You can save on commute. That kind of roughly balances out. So kind of result one was no effect on performance. Result two was employees really liked it and quit rates fell by a third. And Trip.com, the C-suite, I mean, they're a public listed company. They looked at this and said, look, each person that quits costs us about $50,000 because we've got to go out and re-interview, re-advertise, onboard, re-get up to speed. It's very expensive. And this thing is therefore hugely profitable because it's not affecting revenue, but it's cutting costs. And after that, they rolled it out. So that's really the bottom line. As long as you are kind of moderate about it, it doesn't look like you need all 5 days in the office. You can typically get away with, let's say, 3, and that cuts turnover.
Here in Germany, many companies are asking themselves, what is the right approach to remote work? Obviously, in lockdown, everybody had to make it possible that people worked from home. After that, the staff usually felt it was quite convenient and wanted to keep it. But at the same time, employers felt the staff was less productive or the identification with the company was reduced and they didn't have the same kind of energy and team spirit and so forth. How do you find your way? Because my sense is there is probably, correct me if I'm wrong, but there's probably not the one right approach to remote work. But it depends. So what are the questions you have to ask yourself as an, I don't know, HR professional or as a top manager, as a CEO, when you want to find out the right balance and you're stuck between the ones who say 100% in the office are the answer, so get back to the office, whereas the others say, well, we are fully remote. So how do you deal with that? What are the questions that you need to answer in order to find your way?
Absolutely. So one thing is you want to align it with the demographics of the firm. So as I mentioned earlier, if you look at folks in the early mid-20s, they really want to come in. So if you are a company that, say, Goldman Sachs has a huge number of graduate intakes because it has a very steep pyramid with a lot of folks at the bottom, you probably want people in the office 4, maybe 5 days a week. If, on the other hand, you're a company, take Zillow, Instacart, Dropbox, some of the tech firms that tend to be slightly less on grad intakes and more looking at hiring people mid, late 20s, 30s with a bit of experience, you may be, you know, you don't need so much office time. So you want to match it to your demographics. You also want to keep this consistent. It turns out what people want varies a lot. And so, you know, one of the big no-nos is changing a work from home policy every year. Because what does that do? It means, you know, you hire a bunch, you say, we're going to be fully remote, and you hire a bunch of people. And then you say, now we're going to be hybrid, and you hire some more. And then now we're going to be fully in the office. And basically most of your employees are then upset, not happy with it. I would say there's, you know, the other thing is there are 3 golden rules for how to manage this as a manager. One is I would coordinate and monitor practices at the team or firm level. So Mark, if, you know, you and me are in a team together, it's not much point if we're both in 3 days a week, but you're in Monday, I'm in Tuesday, you're in Wednesday, I'm in Thursday, and neither of us in on Friday. Because, you know, A, we're not overlapping, and B, we're not really doing what we're supposed to do. So first thing is I would coordinate. Typically, that's Tuesday to Thursday. Those are the norm days, if you say 1, 3. And I'd also monitor it and enforce it if people are messing around. Because think if it's me, I'm coming in 3, but you, Mark, had decided, you know, you're going to stay at home on Thursday because it's the Euros, and on Tuesday it's a hot day and you want to go to the beach. It really annoys me. And, you know, it means that when I'm in, I'm like, where's Mark? I don't feel like working if I know you're not there. So, you know, one is coordinate and enforce it. 2 is set up regular performance reviews. So if you are in the office, you can see what folks are doing. Imagine you're managing me. You can say, hey, is Nick at his desk working away? When I walk by, is he there? Is the screen on, you know, Python? Or is he either not there whenever I walk by, it's on Champions League? You get a good sense of whether I'm working. I'm not saying it's perfect management, but you can kind of keep your eye on me. When I'm at home, you've no idea what's going on. So you need to effectively manage outputs, have performance evaluation systems. And typically you want to be doing this at least every 6 months. If you cannot evaluate a task on output, I would not have it worked from home. So, you know, it's a pretty golden rule. If you've no idea whether somebody's doing their job, you probably want them in the office. So that is, you know, but rule 2 is have proper performance evaluations. And rule 3 is even for fully remote jobs, and there are some that work well, like in call centers, data entry, some, you know, writing stuff, you still probably want to onboard in person and have some kind of regular in-person meetups and mentoring. So I really don't know any companies that are fully, fully remote. Even things like Airbnb still meet up typically once a month. So, you know, those are the 3 practices I would go through.
Right. There are companies who are producing stuff. You have, you know, you have the white collar workers and you have blue collar workers. And it's usually, at least in Germany, there's sometimes a bit of a quarrel because, you know, while the white collar workers demand to be able to work from home, blue collar workers can't do that for obvious reasons. How would you deal with this sort of imbalance between staff?
That is right. I mean, that was a big issue in 2021, 22. You know, yes, I totally agree. So just to give you some numbers on it, Stanford has 20,000 employees. 8,000 of our employees come in every day. So to be clear, Stanford University includes the university, which you kind of think about, but we actually have 2 large hospitals. So effectively a massive hospital system and a university and all the labs and everything that goes with it. In fact, even a sports complex. We have, you know, multiple sports teams. So 8,000 folks come in every day. They are food, janitorial, transport, cleaning, etc. They can't do anything else. 10,000 are hybrid, me and much of the staff. And then we have actually 2,000 fully remote. So a bunch of kind of back office support staff. You are right that there are variations across these practices, but typically within each role, we do the best practice. And there are also variations in pay. So look, if you're a janitorial, you have to come in every day and you can think that's unfair, but you also get paid, I don't know, you know, $23 an hour, whereas the president gets paid $1 million. So yes, there are variations across everything. And I think as long as it's sensible and goes with the job role and is what people expect when they signed up for the job, they're okay. Coming back to consistency, the big problem I see is firms that regularly change their minds. They hire you, promising you're going to be able to work from home 4 days a week, and then they go to two, and then they go to zero. That's how you get enraged staff, and you get effectively quiet quitting. You get people that basically quit on the job and are now looking for others and just don't care.
Nick, I would like to dwell for a minute on the cultural aspect of things. How does one ensure not only alignment, but stuff like energy level, sense of belonging, team spirit, when people hardly see each other as they did in the past, where you met people, where you saw them in the kitchenette, where you, you know, had these encounters, these by chance, pretty much, and you had this kind of, well, we are part of one team, we saw each other every day, and you had friends amongst your colleagues, which is probably much harder when you're hardly seeing each other. How do you deal with that, the cultural aspect of things?
It is definitely harder. What you'll see is, I mean, let's just be upfront. It is much harder to establish connectivity when it's fully remote. As a result, there are very few large companies that are genuinely fully remote. So I was, for example, interviewing Rich Barton, who's the founder of Zillow, and was a CEO for many years, which is, you know, a Fortune 500 company, does a lot of property stuff. It's a big tech firm. They have Z retreats once a quarter when the whole firm connects up, and then they have lower level, like team by team, or meet up typically once a month. So they're seen as a remote company, but they're still meeting in person typically, you know, 12, 15 times a year. A more normal company, if I take Stanford, my own employer, we're on hybrid. We come in 3 days a week. The thought process is before the pandemic, we used to come in five, but you'd spend a lot of time in the office, kind of sitting there doing email, reading stuff quietly in your office or out in your open plan. Now, if you're only in 2 or 3 days, the plan is those are much more connected up days, and then you do your quiet stuff at home. So in some ways, it's just more efficient. We're maybe spending almost as much face-to-face time together, but we've now bunched it into 3 days, which is, you know, somewhat tiring. At the end of the day, you maybe want a bit of quiet downtime, but then you have, you know, the payoff is 2 days where you don't have to commute.
Nick, when we look into the future, how do you believe work will be organized in, let's say, not the odd 20 years, but probably in 10 years' time? Will there still be enough to do for all of us? Will there be offices around? Do we need the office buildings that we built in the past because everybody needed or had to be in the office? How will the workplace change?
I think the office landscape is not going to be radically different. So most companies, I mean, if you go certainly 10 years out, look, the technology is getting ever better. So 10 years from now, you know, virtual reality, you know, holograms, this kind of stuff, like what you see in the Star Wars Jedi Council, may be there for a few firms, but I don't think it's going to be widespread. It just takes so long for these things to roll out, and the equipment's expensive and heavy. What we're probably going to see is much bigger laptops, better cameras, faster connectivity, better software. So rather than looking, you know, I'm looking at you, Mark, right now in like a laptop with a relatively small window, and we're in 2D.
Right.
So it may be that, you know, we have full size wall hangs, but it's still the case it's going to be better to meet in person. I was with Eric Yuan, the CEO of Zoom, a few months ago, and I was saying, you know, what have you got in the pipeline? What's coming up? And he said, well, and he mentioned a couple of things. And he said, we're also trying to figure out if you can put your hand into the screen and shake the hand of the person on the other side. And I was like, really? Oh. And he just laughed, looked at me, and then changed the topics. I doubt it. You know, I don't think we'll get it. So I think in 10 years' time, we'll be a little bit more, you know, rather than, let's say, 3 in the office, 2 at home, you may be 2 in the office and 3 at home, but I don't see radically different. In 30 years' time, you know, it's hard to predict that far out. But if I were a firm, I would be planning for similar office. The main thing on the office versus 2019 is we are now in the office to connect up and, you know, bond with colleagues and do face-to-face stuff. So you want to reduce the amount of that cubicle land with thousands of little cubicles. Office is no longer really a place to quietly sit for hours on end and put your head down. It's a place to connect up with colleagues and customers. You now quietly put your head down at home. And so that means more meeting space, more open plan, kind of, you know, gathering areas, conference rooms, and less cubicle land.
So, Nick, when it comes to the office environment, would you recommend to companies to put an extra effort into developing an attractive working environment in the office, not just an office, but something where you want to be and not have to be?
Yes, I wouldn't go overboard, but yes, I would. Interestingly, when we surveyed folks, again, across Europe, you know, Germany, right across Europe, the US, when you ask people, when you come into the office, what are the things that attract you? Miles and away, numbers one and two are socializing with and working with colleagues face to face. So, you know, the free bagel, pizza slice, way down on the list, beehive on the roof, way down on the list, actually working with my manager, way down on the list. So folks basically want to come in with their colleagues and teammates, which means the critical thing is coordinating. But yes, offices can facilitate that. So how do you do that? One is kind of big picture physical. Choose offices and easy to get to locations that are reasonably nice. So you're probably better off having a smaller office in the city center that's high quality than an enormous amount of space that's nastier out in the suburbs, which is hard for people to get to. And then point two is, yes, you do probably want to have some coordinating device. It may be something around free food. So you could say free lunch or, you know, certainly coffee, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. You could say, look, we're going to have a teaching chef come in on Thursday. 4 o'clock, we're going to stop slightly early. And then we're going to, you know, randomly sort you into groups so that people can mingle a bit and have you in quads of four. And you're going to learn to cook whatever, beef bourguignon or whatever it is the chef decides. I wouldn't go overboard. I've heard all kinds of weird and wonderful things that, you know, including beehives in the roof and ant colonies and all kinds of strange things that companies are doing. I don't think you need to go there, but I think if you're going to do something, maybe free food and do it on the days that folks are in, is really a coordinating and facilitating device rather than anything more.
Lovely. Nick, thanks so much for taking the time at early hours in Stanford and sharing your insights with us. Really appreciate it. Thanks so much. Thank you.
Great. Thanks for having me on, Mark.